From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, remote viewer Dr. Doom, Ed Dames, who lives part-time in Kiev in the Ukraine, will join us to discuss, of course, remote viewing, but the tragedy over there. As a matter of fact, his apartment is about two blocks away from that mess. The operator of Japan's Fukushima nuclear plant says that the 100 metric tons of highly contaminated water have leaked out of the tank. Jeez, it's the worst incident since last August when a series of radioactive water leaks sparked international alarm. Tokyo Electric Power Company told reporters that the latest leak was unlikely to have reached the ocean. The news of the leak at the site, devastated by that 2011 earthquake and tsunami, further undercut public trust in a utility rocked by a string of mishaps and disclosure issues. Severe storms, including tornadoes, already struck Illinois late Thursday afternoon, knocking out power, damaging buildings, spawning floods. On Thursday night, the storms and high winds swept across Tennessee, pelting Nashville with rain and hail and putting thousands in the dark there. And large sections of the Midwest and South were under tornado watches as powerful and fast-moving storms pushed through the region with flooding and building damages all over Illinois. Senator Edward Markey of Massachusetts has unveiled a gun control bill that he says will help reduce firearm violence by requiring all new guns be personalized with special features such as fingerprint reading technology so they can only be fired by their owners or other authorized users. The Massachusetts Democrat says the bill will make it harder for stolen guns to be used in crimes and will reduce accidental firearm deaths by making it impossible for children to fire guns they find. Markey says the technology is already out there. John Lott, expert, more guns, less crime. What do you think of this one, John?
Well, I think it's just a way for politicians to try to ban people owning guns. The Markey legislation would say that you could only sell these guns in the future if they have these types of features for it. But they're incredibly costly right now. You're basically talking about $1,400 per gun plus another $400 for a watch or some other item that you'd have to have nearby in order to provide a radio signal for the gun to make it work. There's reliability issues. There's no way that police would accept having to use these types of weapons because they couldn't depend upon them being able to fire. And then finally, for the vast majority of people who would be forced to buy them, there'd be actually little benefit. People just don't lose their guns to an attacker in a skirmish. And the rate of accidental gun deaths for children are incredibly low. And even the ones that do occur aren't by children getting a hold of guns. They're usually by an adult male, usually in their 20s, late 20s, who has a criminal record and probably isn't even legally able to go and own the gun to begin with that's accidentally firing it. So it's just not relevant for most people, and it's just a way to try to reduce gun ownership.
Is this bill, John, does it have any teeth?
Well, the bill has teeth. It basically only allows you to buy a gun if it meets these types of restrictions. But fortunately, I don't think it's going to pass.
Okay.
I don't think it's even going to get a vote in the House or the Senate right now.
John's blog, by the way, you can follow it on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Listen to this story. Supporters of a plan to divide California into six states can begin collecting signatures to get this proposal on the ballot. The Secretary of State has announced that the proposed ballot initiative, known as Six Californias, could move forward as fast as next week. The NSA is not the only one capable of tapping phone calls anymore, thanks to a new smartphone app called CrowdPilot, which could potentially let anyone listen in on your calls without your knowledge. CrowdPilot lets any user bring a third party into a conversation without alerting the person on the other end of the line. the modern day equivalent of picking up a landline while someone else is already on the call. Cost about a dollar. Look out. The biggest ever stem cell trial involving heart attack patients has gotten underway in London. The study, which will involve 3,000 patients in 11 European countries, should show whether the treatment can cut death rates and repair damaged tissue after a heart attack. All the patients will have standard treatment to widen their narrowed arteries, which involves inserting a small tube called a stent. In addition, half the patients will have stem cells taken from their bone marrow and injected into their heart. This will happen within days of them suffering a heart attack. Now, the incredible part of this entire story is author Christian Wild, Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair, has been talking on this program for how many years now, Christian, about stem cells?
I believe it's 10 years.
10 years, stem cells in the heart. You have had a number of coast-to-coast listeners go through trial programs, mm-hmm. and you've saved their lives.
Well, you saved their lives. Coast-to-coast saved their lives. They've come on, and they thanked you and thanked the listeners. It was an opportunity that they couldn't even believe existed. And these patients are doing very well right now. Some of them were done years ago. And maybe somebody listening tonight, George, or a family member, will be encouraged by what we talk about, because 22 million people worldwide are dying of congestive heart failure. Now, here's the difference. In the two approaches that are being done. Okay. Number one, it's good news that the trial in the UK is not accepting any money from any pharmaceutical company. So they hope to come back with a real, true result. So the UK approach announced today is dealing with injection of the patient's own mesenchymal bone marrow stem cells very soon after a patient has experienced their heart attack. There exists a real possibility of a second heart attack following the first event as an inflammatory repair process sets up to combat the initial mm-hmm. injury. So oftentimes there'll be a second or even a third heart attack. Now this process can set off vulnerable plaque and form blood clots down the way in the artery. Now the other approach is what I actually wrote the book about in the first place. It was for patients who had had their heart attack or multiple heart attacks years before. So I'm sure many families listening tonight will be encouraged by this news, that yes, the hearts are repairable. So there is an ongoing trial at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles that, like the UK study, also introduces a therapy very soon after the infarct. And this trial uses cardiosphere-derived autologous stem cells. It's under the leadership of world leader Dr. Eduardo Marbon. He's the director of Cedars-Sinai Heart Institute.
How could we be 10 years ahead of what's been going on now?
Well, I thought by now, George, that the trials would have all been able to continue. Many of them ran out of money. And I thought for sure with the results, and in the book, Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair, I interviewed the world leaders, and I interviewed their patients. Some of those patients you also had on the show.
That's right.
That were done 10 years ago. And they're living totally normal lives all this time.
We can conclude by this study, which hasn't even finished yet, that this works.
It works, George.
It works.
They said in this, I read today, that they're looking for a 25% success rate. I will tell you that in the Marvel trial, international Marvel trial, they had an 83% success rate. And in the meantime, people in late-stage heart failure are dying of the disease. It's really unfortunate. I want to say, too, also working with Dr. Marbon, our two other world leaders in stem cell research, Dr. Raj Makkar, Dr. Timothy Henry, I owe a great deal to both of these doctors for their contribution to me as I was writing Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair.
Good job. Christian's phone number, by the way, and his website, myheartbook.com. Here's a toll-free number if you want any other information, 1-866-STEM-123. 10 years ahead before anybody even talked about this. Two senior officials at J.P. Morgan Chase and the predecessor companies repeatedly confronted Bernie Madoff over irregularities in his business, according to a new lawsuit suggesting the bank leaders had direct knowledge of his Ponzi scheme. And what the heck is happening with bankers? Already, two J.P. Morgan bankers within a couple weeks of each other have killed themselves. One just leapt to his death in Hong Kong. What's going on? Why this sudden rash of banker suicides? In a moment, we'll be talking with V, the Gorilla Economist, about this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. So what are we to make of this sudden rash of banker suicides? Does this trail of dead bankers lead somewhere? Is there something else going on? V is the Gorilla Economist. He's worked for some of the top commodity trading firms and investment banks. He has also contributed to private think tanks that help create investment policy. V predicted the pinpoint accuracy of the play-by-play of the Eurozone crisis. He was the first to warn about Japan's disastrous economic policies. He was with me last year, and he's back with us on Coast to Coast. V, this is an amazing story. First of all, I want to check in with you and see how you're doing.
I'm doing great, George. I'm excited and very, you know, very thankful to be back on with you guys. And, you know, there's so much going on. I mean, where do we begin? I mean, 2013 was an explosive year financially. And then 2014, George, I'm telling you right now, it's like the wheels are coming off on this thing. And it's, I mean, we are starting this year in fifth gear, my friend.
Oh, boy. Let's keep these wheels on before they fall off. Now, these bankers that have committed suicide, there must be five or six of them all around the country, all around the planet, and two most recently from J.P. Morgan, one from Hong Kong, jumping out of a skyscraper. There's something weird going on here, V. What do you think it is?
Well, let's start with this. The unofficial numbers for these banksters that are dead unofficially, from what my sources have been telling me, the number ranges around a little over 20.
20? Okay? Wow.
A little over 20. We have so far about eight guys that are confirmed dead. Okay. The latest one being this gentleman, Lee, who is a junior investment banker who is linked to the Forex market, who slipped on a banana peel and fell off the Hong Kong J.P. Morgan headquarters. There is a connection between Lee. Also, the fact between Ryan Crane, which is the gentleman from Connecticut who mysteriously died in his home, as well as Gabriel McGee. That's the first J.P. Morgan guy that, you know, was, you know, he was walking and all of a sudden he fell out of the 33rd floor all by himself. And, you know, 33rd floor is, you know, it's kind of a, you know, anybody who looks into numbers, that's kind of a flag right there.
It but sure is.
The thing about McGee and Ryan is this. Here's the thing. When you look at Ryan, I'm going to get into these J.P. Morgan guys right off the bat.
Okay.
When you look at Ryan Crane, the man was in charge of platform trading. Okay. He was in charge of all trade platforms. He knows the programs. He knows it in and out. And one thing, when I worked for a UK bank, okay, and I headed up one of the divisions over here in the U.S., we were in constant communication with London. When you have a bank like J.P. Morgan with their New York office, you better believe that they will be in constant communication with their London office. Now, for those that don't know, Wall Street is the ancillary system of this whole financial scheme, so to speak. The nexus of this whole thing centers around London. Now, Ryan Crane and Gabriel McGee, and what was Gabriel's position? Well, he did the same thing that Ryan did. He was head of IT. So he had the heads of two departments, okay, and two headquarters. These are guys that would be looking at the trade desks, the data from them. They will be looking at the same spreadsheets. They were looking at the same numbers. What did these guys know that, or what did they uncover? What was it that these guys shared? And they absolutely knew each other. They shared information constantly. So they uncovered something that was so heinous, so, so incredible that if it were to get out, you would see a massive amount of reprisals. You will see a massive amount of people getting arrested, thrown in jail. So this, my friend, is a cleaning, is a clean house method that's being done and is being portrayed right before our eyes. Now the question becomes, George, what was it? What's really going on? There's some little factoids out there.
That's right.
Breadcrumbs that have been dropped into this trail that leads through the woods. Okay. The first thing being, if we go back to 2012, and I don't know if people have forgotten this or this kind of got, played out a little while in the news and was brushed underneath the rug, so to speak. If we remember a man by the name of Bruno Ixel, and Ixel goes by his famous name, the London Whale. All right. That is the derivatives trade that the London Whale did that wound up being a major loss for J.P. Morgan. That loss was initially reported $2 billion, and then quickly the numbers inflated from $2 billion to $5, $5 to $7, $7 to $9, $9 to $10. The actual numbers, and I called it about a year, right when it happened, I called the numbers at over $100 billion in losses in the derivatives market from that one trade. That number was later confirmed by a few other investigative reporters and some guys on the inside, one of which was actually reported on C-SPAN, okay? So it was a massive loss with London Whale. Now, what the heck did he lose? Oftentimes, you're making these derivative bets, you got to hedge it somehow. And what my sources have told me is what J.P. Morgan used to hedge those bets and use as collateral was actually Chinese gold. The Chinese were storing the gold over at the Bank of England, as well as J.P. Morgan, as well as Barclays, and that gold was used as collateral for the trade. So when that trade went bust, that gold went poof. It was collateral. It was lost. Okay.
Gone.
Now we're gonna follow that trail of breadcrumbs a little bit more. What happened in the fall of 2013? All of a sudden, J.P. Morgan says, hey, guess what, guys? We're packing it in. We're getting out of the commodities business. We're not going to do it anymore. What? That was a shock to the system. It was unheard of that a major player who used to brag about zero losses in trade all of a sudden decided, hey, we're packing up. We're taking our ball. We're leaving the playground. We're not going to do commodities anymore. And then shortly after that announcement that they're exiting commodities, they announced the sale of their headquarters in Lower Manhattan. And that headquarters, George, okay, houses.
And you're talking about the real estate, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Their real estate, One Chase Plaza, which is a beautiful skyscraper. That headquarters, George, houses the largest private vault in the world. I'm talking about a vault that's about 10 stories underground and about the size of a football field.
Oh.
And it's connected directly underground to the New York Fed. Here's what it gets interesting.
Hmm.
They sold that property, which is valued at about $3 billion. They sold it to the Chinese for $720 million.
Wow.
A third of the price. Now, the question becomes, why would you sell something so cheaply? Simple. It was collateral. And now we begin to see the links here, the dots, so to speak, pop out at us, and we're starting to draw a very fine line and a very fine picture. Now, we know, and BaFin also confirmed this as well. BaFin is the German financial arm that's kind of works with the Bundesbank, but they are very serious players in financial regulations in Germany. The head of BaFin came out and said, there is massive fraud in the gold market that's even bigger than what's going on with LIBOR. Okay, that's a huge thing. Now, we all know, I mean, listeners to your show know this, anybody who's astute financially knows that there's massive manipulation in the gold market, massive manipulations in commodities in gold, silver, and even in oil. And it just so happens that this link with Crane as well as McGee has to do with the manipulations that are occurring within the gold market, the Chinese gold, and the London whale trade loss.
Hold on for a second, V. We're going to come right back with you in just a moment. Incredible story on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We are talking about this incredible story where a number of bankers around the planet have either committed suicide or they have passed on under very strange circumstances. Our guest, V, with us as we try to sort through this and unravel it. V, of course, I'm getting lots of emails, and as we did when we first talked, why do you call yourself V?
There's a lot of reasons. Mostly for victory, I guess. And then it has to also do with a couple of points in my life that are very important to me that happen to start with the letter V. That's about it. And also allow some anonymity. And anonymity in the world I operate in is a good thing.
Keeps you a little safer, doesn't it?
A lot safer, yes.
So when these stories started popping, these bankers started dying, and I started looking at the dots. Some of them I said, all right, maybe there were some legitimate suicides here. But after we had so many, I said, you know what? Somebody's bumping these people off. They're getting hit. And so let's go back to that thought that you were bringing up before, the slipping on banana peels and things like that. And I think wasn't there one who got killed by a electric nail gun?
Yes. There was a gentleman by the name,
who would commit suicide with an electric nail gun?
Yeah, exactly. That is, that's a gentleman by the name of, I believe, Richard Talley. That was the guy's name. 57 years old. Shoots himself about 6 to 8 times.
A lot of Colorado.
with a nail gun, you know, so. It's ridiculous. I mean, the stories you hear about the guy who tries to, commit suicide by shooting himself 3 times in the back of the head.
Well, let me go through just some of these names that I have. Of course, we have the one in Hong Kong who jumps off a 30-story building. He's 33 years old, the one that you just mentioned.
Right.
Then we've got the one from Deutsche Bank. He was an executive there. That was on January 26th. Gabriel McGee. The 39-year-old senior manager at J.P. Morgan. Michael Duker, he's a chief economist at Russell Investments. He fell down a 50-foot embankment that police are describing as a suicide. Richard Talley, the one you just mentioned, shot himself in the head, they say, with a nail gun out of Colorado. Another J.P. Morgan director. Henry Crane, he died, 37 years old. These guys are all young, too. Tim Dickinson. A communications director at the Swiss bank. Another one. I mean, so on and on and on and on. Now, here's something also that I then find fascinating. They are all young.
Yes.
What's going on there?
Well, here's the thing. These are when you're this young, when you're at this age bracket in the banking and finance world, you're that 30 and at the latest, the 50-year mark. You're kind of like a mid to top level manager. You're not quite out there yet. You're not with the real big guys.
But you're doing okay.
You're doing very well. You're doing very well, number one. And number two, you're on the operational end of a lot of things. So you kind of are the buffer between top level, CEOs and executives and the middle managers on down. You're the buffer. So a lot of data flow goes through you, and you get to see a lot of information. So if there is a clean house operation in effect, you're most likely going to be the guy that's going to get ticked off. Case in point, I mean, you mentioned the guy from Deutsche Bank, that is William Brokesmith. Okay? Brokesmith, now you got to understand about Deutsche Bank, which is the largest bank in the Eurozone, number one. Number two, is also the most toxic bank in the Eurozone. We're talking about a bank that's $74 trillion in debt when you count their derivative losses. Deutsche Bank plays backup quarterback to J.P. Morgan when it comes to metals manipulation. Okay.
So J.P. Morgan would turn to this bank for assistance, for help.
Correct. these guys were run very close. They run very tight together. Now, when BaFin, which is a German banking regulator, when they started investigating Deutsche Bank, they started realizing, wait a minute, there's something going on here. And one lead led to the next that got them involved into looking at the London Fix, which is basically a global gold benchmark used by like mining companies, central banks, bullion banks, jewelers, that pretty much fixes the price of gold, right?
Yes.
They're finding fraud everywhere. And not only is Deutsche Bank involved, but you got Barclays and HSBC and Societe Generale, JP Morgan. And guess what? The two biggest manipulators, Deutsche Bank and JP Morgan, Deutsche Bank at the same time that JP Morgan, the same time frame that JP Morgan announced, hey, we're getting out of the commodities market, Deutsche Bank announces the same thing.
Go figure.
Exactly. And then Brokesmith winds up hanging himself in his London house.
So let me ask you a couple scenarios and tell me what you think might be going on. Scenario one, that they're all linked together in some major league banking scandal and they just can't take it. So they kill themselves. Is that possible?
No. Nah.
All right. So you're going to rule that out.
Yep.
All right.
Completely.
Theory number two, they're all on the end of some major fraud. And somebody wants to keep them quiet. Maybe they've threatened to say, look, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going public. And they've been bumped off. What about that?
That is the most plausible scenario in this case.
Now, if that's the case, V, if that's the case, what do you think the major fraud or scandal might be? It can't be another housing bubble. Not this right?
Oh, this is big. The major scandal is, and I think, George, I think people forgot about this. Remember the LIBOR scandal? Yeah, that's the fixing, the insider fixing of interest rates and lending rates between banks and, you know, which affects consumer rates, mortgages. I mean, it affects everything. LIBOR affected $800 trillion worth of paper out there. $800 trillion. It's massive, the LIBOR scandal. So that's just one scandal. So then we have, let's go back to that BaFin investigation, because these guys have accelerated to the point that Interpol is involved. Okay? And now we're seeing that there's, you know, they're finding the corruption and fraud in LIBOR, the suspected fraud in precious metals, and in Forex.
There's
the three big things, George. There's the trifecta. There's the three-headed monster that's behind this whole thing, which is LIBOR, the precious metals market, and Forex. Those three are rife with corruption.
Do you think what's going on in South Africa, unemployment 24%, Venezuela's falling apart, this mess in the Ukraine, does this have anything to do with this grouping of issues worldwide?
It has everything to do with it. This whole scenario, I mean, let's look at LIBOR. Let's look at Forex, which is the foreign exchange market. Let's look at the precious metals manipulation. When you take all these things, okay, these are all symptomatic problems, all right, that correlate to a Western banking system, specifically the Anglo-American banking structure. And when you dive into that further, all what we're seeing right now is a fight for survival, if you will, for the entire petrodollar system, George. And I said this, you know, if you're a central banker, the last thing you want, okay, is to allow precious metals to appreciate in price.
That's right.
If you're a central banker, you want to maintain as much monetary credibility as possible. So when you look at what's happening to the whole entire world, George, in the last, I'd say 5 to 10 years, what's been happening? 24 of the largest economies in the world are all setting up currency swaps, bypassing the dollar, okay? And just today, Australia just announced that they're doing a yuan settlement, meaning they can go ahead and buy oil from the Chinese, which the Chinese are selling Russian oil, and I'm going to get into those details very soon. But they'll be able to buy it and pay for it in yuan, bypassing the dollar. So when you look at 2012 and 2013 together, those 2 years, every single trade agreement, every single global market agreement and regulation that has been passed has to do with accepting the convertibility of the yuan and the establishment of gold as a trade settlement. And nothing within those 2 years worth of regulations, nothing mentions the dollar. Nothing.
V, are we talking about a economic collapse based on these deaths or a banking collapse or both?
George, we are looking at both. What we're seeing with these dead men, okay, even though these dead men don't tell no tales, but their involvement in key positions are speaking volumes of a much bigger picture. And these dead guys, George, are a harbinger to the economic collapse and the coming bank failures. We know that the banks are insolvent. We know that the Fed's been pumping and keeping this whole big, giant Ponzi scheme afloat. We know these things. And when you see these guys getting offed, getting whacked, how we say it in New York, you know, that raises red flags. It raises red flags all over, because what's going on here?
And this is just over a small, short, several-week period, isn't it?
Correct. Correct. I mean, can you imagine, if you will, you know, you had if there was a McDonald's and all of a sudden McDonald's managers were dropping dead within a span of a week. I mean, you'd have the news crews out there trying to find out, hey, what's
right.
going on?
Or,
is it the working conditions? Is it the stress? Did they eat something? What's going on?
Or doctors at hospitals around the country. Anything that could tie in some similarity. And the fact that these are young bankers that are very healthy guys, by the way. There's something strange going on here.
Absolutely. And when people say, well, V, you know, here's the thing. I mean, we've had banker suicides before in history. Well, yeah, we did. And that was back in 29 when these guys were jumping out of their skyscrapers and committing suicide. That's because they lost their clients' money. That's because, you know, they were basically suffering the after effects of a complete market crash. These guys are dying when the market's up 10%. I mean, nothing adds up. So, you know, this is really a harbinger of a much bigger, broader event that's being played out globally, and we're seeing it flare up in places like in South Africa, in Venezuela, and in the Ukraine. All of this has to do with the survival of the petrodollar system. And what's happening, George, is the world is in the process of supplanting that system and breaking free from its shackles.
Here is the $64,000 question for you, V. This is all happening now. I don't know if there are going to be any more banker deaths or not, but what kind of a timetable, in your opinion, are we talking about?
I'm looking at, I mean, it's hard to look into a crystal ball when it comes to this, but there's a couple of things that are happening globally, which I would calculate into my calculations. I'd give it until at least 2015 or so, when we start really seeing this thing. I mean, 2014, you know, wheel starts coming off. And I think I said that in the last broadcast that I was on with you.
Yeah.
And I'm still looking at that 2015 time frame of this whole thing just imploding and coming apart. I mean, we want to look at some major signs. Here we go. 2013, what happens? Well, Russia and China signed the largest energy deal ever, okay? $270 billion energy deal.
Huge.
And
absolutely,
that's between Rosneft, which is Russia's largest oil company, happens to be the largest oil company in the world, two times bigger than ExxonMobil. It's bigger than Royal Dutch Shell. And they have basically agreed to sell oil to Sinopec, which is a Chinese company, and Sinopec is going to be the wholesaler of Russian oil. Boom, shot number one to the petrodollar system. Here's shot number two. Iran's being faced with sanctions. Okay, they need to keep their economy afloat. What happens? Well, Putin, being the tactician that he is, goes ahead and buys Iranian oil to the tune of 500,000 barrels per day.
And gets a deal. And he gets a deal.
He gets a sweet deal. And the Russians don't need the Iranian oil. You see? So they make all the oil in the world. What they do is they're just taking the Iranian oil and then selling it over to the Europeans and the rest
That's
of the
right.
world.
That's right. For a nice profit.
Exactly. And in the process, it's another shot to the petrodollar system. The third big shot came when Iran started selling oil to the Turks and the Indians, and they'd settle that gold, that oil with gold. And that's the third big shot. Okay, and then you have the emerging markets waking up saying, hey, you know, we don't have to spend all this and, you know, all this expense on converting the dollar so we can buy food and buy energy for our population. We can just cozy up to the Chinese and do a currency swap with them and, you know, we use our own currency. This is great. And if the U.S. comes breathing down our necks, we just cozy up to the Chinese and the Russians, and they'll tell the U.S. to go take a hike, just like they did in Syria, and the U.S. packed it in.
If you were in Hollywood, you could not write a better script than what's unfolding right before us.
Absolutely. This is like, the movie The International mixed with the Devil's Advocate all in one.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Al Pacino and Tom Cruise to come popping in any minute now. This is just unbelievable. So I guess, is anybody, and you know, you mentioned Interpol for a moment, but is anybody publicly tying in the deaths of these bankers? Any law enforcement agency?
In the United States, no.
Nothing.
In Europe, there are some murmurings. There are some things being mentioned, even in China, but in the United States, it's a dead as a doornail. I think U.S. law enforcement is more concerned with SWAT teaming a grandmother's home because her dog was barking or something. That's what they're more concerned with these days.
I wonder what the banksters are saying. They've got to be concerned. They've got to be biting their fingernails.
They are biting their fingernails because what's happening is in this grand global chessboard, these guys are losing, okay? They're losing their very system that they've relied upon, and that system is a system of pure paper and pure manipulation and pure fraud. And the Russians and the Chinese are checkmating these guys, George. They're checkmating them left and right. And that's what they're freaked out about. And now they can, you know, because of things like the internet, because of whistleblowers, because of people on the inside disseminating information, you know, they can't keep the fraud going because systemically and mathematically it's becoming more and more impossible. And something, George, that's unsustainable has an endpoint, and we're reaching that endpoint.
V's website, of course, roguemoney.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back with them. Final hour to go here with them. We're going to take your phone calls. By the looks of things, almost all the lines are already filled, but maybe you can get through. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.